Welcome to Steppin' Out Radio, America's original 12-step radio show. From addiction to recovery, from despair to encouragement, and everything in between, this is real life. And now, Steppin' Out Radio.
Hello, America. Welcome to Steppin' Out. Each and every time at about this time, at this time of the week, we get together with you, originating out of New York City. I'm Scott Clark. Thanks for joining us. We spread our wealth all over this great country of ours, talking about recovery, true stories of addiction, true stories of recovery. You're not going to get this anywhere else. You get it only here. And I'd like to welcome Wendy, who is recovering, and it's going to be our subject tonight, but we're going to talk about everything and everything. Hi, Wendy. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Wendy is recovering from her addiction to overeating. She's going to share her experience, her strength, and her hope with us, and we're just going to talk about what it took to get here, and we usually begin at the beginning. So what's the beginning for you, Wendy?
Well, I believe that I've had this disease probably my whole life. When I was a little girl, when I was like 2-3 years old, I used to ask my mother for seconds, and then she would say no, and then I would say, "Why does Daddy get seconds?" She'd say, "Because he's a man and you're a little girl." And then that eventually progressed to me stealing food, eating off of other people's plates. I did everything that this is one book and program talks about. I ate off the floor. I ate out of the garbage. I stole food. I ate burnt food, stale food. I did it all. I've done it all in this disease. I'm also bulimic as well. I was in a rehab for bulimia. And as also my mother was a compulsive overeater as well. And the whole thing was that who was going to get to the food, the whole race, who was going to get to the food first? Was it going to be me or her? And of course, I would win.
Why would you win? Usually mom wins cases. And
when everybody was sleeping. I'm a sneak eater. See, okay. There's different types of compulsive overeaters. Mm.
First of all, let's go back. You said, is this just from as far back as you can remember that you had this?
Absolutely. I knew that I was a compulsive overeater because something happened to me. When I would pick up food, I wouldn't function. I just wouldn't function. And I remember that I found out about Overeaters Anonymous when I was about 23 years old, and I went to see my therapist after that, around then. And I said to her, "There's something wrong with me. I'm an alcoholic with food. I just totally, I tune out. I'm like a Bowery bum drunk with food. Like a Bowery bum gets drunk and lays around the street, you know? I was like that with food because I would totally tune out. And half the time when I was eating, I didn't even taste what I ate. And you wouldn't believe it from looking at me, but I'm a Costco size bags and boxes binger. And I knew, so that's the kind of addict, a food addict that I am. And when I went to my therapist, I told her that I was an addict with food. I was like an alcoholic with food. And she told me to go to this program called Overeaters Anonymous. And I said, "Really? There's an Overeaters Anonymous?" And she said, "Yeah, there is." And she told me it was a program, 12-step program, just like Alcoholics Anonymous. And I can go to a meeting anytime. And when I walked in those rooms, I just felt like I knew I was home.
You knew you were home. What was it when you first heard this person suggest to you that you go to Overeaters Anonymous? What was your first reaction to that? Were you at a moment of time then where you finally, where you were thinking, "Look, I'm looking for an answer," and you were desperate? Or was it, "Oh my God," because I'm thinking about when somebody told me I could go to a place called AA, mm-hmm. I said, "Thanks, but no thanks. I'll take care of this myself." I just did not want to be an alcoholic. I didn't want to be that.
I would take being an alcoholic over the You know, I don't know. I just
Was there any fear, though, of saying, "Oh God, I got to go to an Overeaters"? And what is that? Was there any fear?
No, I had no fear. I remember walking into the meeting. I'm from the Bronx. My first meeting was in the Bronx. It was these little old ladies in the Bronx, and they were talking about food and things that they did with food, and I was home. I just felt home, and I just felt like other people do things with food that I've done, and it was just amazing.
You said you suffered from bulimia. That you
right?
Do you suffer from or exercise bulimia? I mean, is that an action or is that an affliction?
It was an exercise because I'm an under-exerciser. That's my problem with that. I'm definitely, that's something I'm working on now. But I was a laxative addict.
Mm-hmm.
I was addicted. My thing, I was in a few relapses in this disease, and I've been abstinent now with the food. I've been abstinent for 14 years.
Wow.
This is my longest run, and it really is a day at a time.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to tell anybody that out there who's struggling with this disease that if I can do it, then anybody can do it, because I felt I was hopeless. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get a day together. Really, just couldn't get a day together. And my whole thing was I used to work in a very famous department store on Fifth Avenue, because I'm in the cosmetics industry. And I remember one point, every lunch hour, running to go get my fix of food. I used to take long lunches, going to get my fix, and then going to get my boxes of laxatives, and just spending a lot of time in the bathroom. And this is debilitating. It can be a debilitating disease.
Now, this is a progression, obviously. I mean, when you started, when you were fighting over food with your mother, it wasn't, you probably didn't know about laxatives at that time, did you?
No, I didn't.
Right. Did you suffer from obesity at any time?
I did.
Okay.
I was a chubby kid, and I was, my highest weight was 200 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
That was my highest weight.
Was your mother, you said your mother also was an overeater.
Yes.
Was she obese?
Yes.
Okay.
Very obese.
But she was not, she didn't practice, she wasn't bulimic in that she kept the weight.
No,
down.
Not at all.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely, I believe addiction is something that, I just believe it's something that's genetic. I believe that because it runs in my family. My mother was a compulsive overeater. I became one. My father was a people addict. I see a lot of it in the rest of my family. A lot of addictive behaviors within certain people, and it definitely is genetic. Some would think I could have been born with this disease.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. Because it was always something in food that it's definitely like taking a drug for me. Like that first bite was like,
And did you chase that? Because I know as a recovering alcoholic, I would be chasing that first drink then every single time I pulled another drink and put it into my mouth. It would be, that first time, and I go, okay, now let's get to that feeling again. And then I was chasing that all night long.
It definitely is that. It really can be expensive too. It really can, because I remember going to get these binges. I used to date a guy that used to live in Brooklyn, and I remember on my way home from his house, I used to go to this store, and I used to spend $50 on food. And I know that they'll never give you a DUI for eating, but you know what, I remember binging on this food, and my car was just swerving. I was in the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel. Just my car swerving back and forth, really back and forth, and I couldn't stop. I just couldn't stop. But I had that feeling afterwards.
I never thought about that. A DUIF, driving under the influence of food. Well, it could happen.
It can.
Right?
It absolutely can.
Wow.
thriving under the influence of food. And look, this is the first time I ever talked about that subject on this show. We cover everything here. It's intriguing to me because the bulimia also is one that's, I guess, an acquired progression, because you don't just wake up knowing about laxatives. You just you said you suffered from obesity. You were overweight,
mm-hmm.
And then where did you find that laxatives were an answer? Where I didn't have to be fat then, but I could still eat.
Well, unfortunately, I was really in my disease, and I was desperate, and I was really looking for, like they say.
How old at this time?
How old was I?
Yeah.
I'm absent from laxatives 16 years, so it was like 17 years ago. So I was looking, like they say in the AA Big Book, the easier, softer way.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in a meeting, and I heard some girl talking about throwing up, and I heard about bulimia in a meeting. Mm-hmm. And I never really thought about it. And then all I knew, she was tall and skinny, and that's all I wanted to be my whole life. Was I wanted to be tall. I never wanted to be me. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be tall and skinny and blonde. Instead, I wound up being short and chubby with curly hair.
Brown too, right?
Right, exactly. And she was tall. To me, she was tall. She lived in the Upper East Side, and she was skinny. And my sick mind caught on to that, and she talked about throwing up. So I tried to do that, and it didn't work. For me, it just didn't work. So then I heard about somebody taking syrup of ipecac. So I tried that, and I must have had a really bad batch. Well, I definitely did have a bad batch. I was just nauseous all night.
It's one thing to say it. It's another thing to use it. And
exactly.
We'll talk about using it when we return on Steppin' Out with Wendy.
More true stories of real people who clawed their way back from addiction are just a tap away with Steppin' Out Radio's new mobile app, available for iOS and Android devices. Go to steppinoutradio.com on your phone or tablet now and click the banner icon. Find that favorite episode, share it through email, or post it on Facebook and Twitter. steppinoutradio.com has one-touch subscriptions for iTunes, Google Play, and all other popular podcasting apps. Find it at steppinoutradio.com.
I'm in a New York state of mind.
Welcome back from New York City to all across this great country of ours. Welcome to Steppin' Out Radio. This is Scott Clark. Thanks for joining us at this time. We're talking about the addiction of overeating. If you believe that you may have a trouble with overeating, with bulimia, if you're sticking a finger down your throat, if you're using laxatives, if you're drinking too much, if you're smoking too much, if you're not eating enough, if you're overeating, if you have a problem, gambling, if you have a problem, there is help. And you can first go to our website, www.12stepmeeting.com, www.12stepmeeting.com. We have a free newsletter available for you if you'd like, and you can also contact us. Let us know what's happening with you, and we'd love to keep in contact with you. Also, our subject with Wendy right now is overeating, and there's a wonderful program called Overeaters Anonymous. It's www.oa.org, www.oa.org. Is that in the yellow book, too? I know AA is in the yellow book and some NA, but
it's possible that it is. But you can Google Overeaters Anonymous and it'll come up.
Okay,
definitely.
www.oa.org. We're talking with Wendy. When we last left you, we were talking about something that I don't know if I could pronounce it, but you had a wonderful time in pronouncing this laxative that we started getting to. Is that right?
Syrup of ipecac.
Okay, I'll let you say that. Easily said than done. I mean, X-Lax, I know, but is it like X-Lax Plus? Is it like X-Lax, only different?
No, what it is it's what they give people who take poison to make them throw up.
Oh, okay.
That's what it was. So
see, when I'm thinking laxative, I'm thinking, you know, it comes in, let's get it out. But you're talking about the other way. You're talking
right.
about
I tried to do it that way so I wouldn't have to stick my fingers down my throat.
Right.
So that's what happened to me was I got just nauseous all night and I just couldn't throw up.
Do overeaters also go the other way with the laxatives? Is that used as well, where they just crap it out?
Yeah. Well, you know what? See, one thing about this disease is that it can go either way. As much as I'm a compulsive overeater, mm-hmm. I can be very rigid and I could be anorexic as well. Mm-hmm. Very, very much. Very much so. Because it can go to both. It can go to both extremes as well. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's interesting because an overeater, I would think, is a person who overeats and then finds a way to get that food out of their system. Whereas an anorexic, I thought heretofore, was a person who would look and say, my God, I look fat, I can't eat, and would not eat. But you say they're one and the same in some ways?
It's all one disease.
Okay.
It really is. Because when I can get, people will say, stop eating, and then I'll keep losing weight. And then there's a point when you just don't want, you're afraid to stop losing weight and you can become anorexic. Same thing can happen to an anorexic when they tell an anorexic to keep eating and then they start to really grab onto it and they start becoming a compulsive overeater.
Now, let's go back to the overeating where you were and what you were taking to get you to vomit.
Mm-hmm.
So you eat and then you go to the bathroom and you check it all out.
Right.
And that became a daily existence?
That was a daily existence for me.
Explain how you would do that, how you would go for privacy and how you could find privacy to do it as many times as you might have to do it.
People find you missing a lot.
Would you wait till everybody got out of the bathroom before you would do it, or would you just do it and say, I'm sick, and I'm wondering how that works?
Well, at that time in my life, I was living alone.
Mm-hmm.
So at home, that was no problem.
Right.
But I wouldn't care. An addict doesn't care. An addict wants what they want when they want it.
And they'll find a way. An addict will find their way.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. So I found a way. I was always running to the bathroom a lot, always to just get it out.
Okay. And in the house, it was fine when you were living alone. Was that by design that you would live alone so that you could do this freely?
Oh no.
No.
No. That wasn't by design. It just happened to that. I was single at that point in my life.
Mm-hmm. So, tell me about the progression on how it went, and before you finally got help, and then how you got help as well.
Well, it was 16 years ago. I knew that if I didn't do something, I was going to die. And I went to a doctor that told me if my potassium was 2 points lower, I would, when I came into the rehab, that I would have died.
What is your age at that time?
I was about 31.
Okay.
32.
Okay. So you had been an overeater since childhood, which is, you're talking about 27, 28 years now you had been dealing with this.
I've been pretty much, my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
I've been dealing with this. I've been dealing with the yo-yo dieting with the sneak eating and with the bulimia, and I've just struggled with this my whole life. And what really hit the bottom for me was I was in this rehab. It was 16 years ago. I almost died, and that rehab saved my life. So I got abstinent from the laxatives from there, but I still struggled with the food.
We'll continue with the struggle of the food even while in rehab and out. A lifesaver, but struggles continue. With Wendy on Steppin' Out, we'll be back.
Aren't these stories of addiction and recovery inspiring? Wish you could share them instantly with friends or even relatives? You can with Steppin' Out Radio's new mobile app. It's available for iOS and Android phones and tablets. Share that episode in an email, Facebook post, or tweet with a single tap on your screen. Download shows to your devices and listen while working, jogging, or lounging. Prefer a podcast? Steppin' Out Radio is on Google Play, iTunes, and many other podcast platforms. Go to steppinoutradio.com to subscribe.
Welcome back to Steppin' Out. This is Scott Clark. We're with Wendy. We're talking about overeating. Thanks for joining us on Steppin' Out. If you think you may have a problem with overeating, the website is where you can go for first help, www.oa.org. Or you can check our website out, too. It's www.12stepmeeting.com here at Steppin' Out, www.12stepmeeting.com. Wendy, we were talking about rehab, and you got to rehab because of the progression of overeating.
Mm-hmm.
You said at that time, though, you were in your 20s?
I was in my 30s.
Your 30s, I'm sorry. So let me go back for just a second, because in the break we were talking about your mother had earlier in the show. You'd said that your mother and you almost competed about
right.
In overeating. What was that competition like? And as you grew in going into high school and everything, what was your relationship with your mother through that time in relation to the addiction?
My relationship in general with my mother was, it was either black or white. It was either we were really close. When we were close, we were really close. When we were fighting, we were on the warpath. And I grew up in a one-bedroom apartment, and my bedroom was off the kitchen. And I remember my mother, in the middle of the night, used to be eating over a pot. So it was really something we both didn't realize, how we were competing to get to the food. But and then I would go, when I would notice something was gone, I'd say, ugh, she got to it first. And so that's what it was like. But through high school, I binged. I really wasn't involved in any kind of activities. I really didn't date. I was pretty much almost an outcast with people. And I didn't go to my prom. I didn't even know I had one. So until the last year of high school, when I was in 12th, I was in 12th grade. I went on this quote unquote, I went on this diet, and I lost weight. And that's when I started fitting in with people a little bit. But eventually that's what it was, because I didn't have tools. I didn't have a higher power. I didn't have any of these things. And I relapsed. I kept relapsing, and I kept on going back to where I was.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was in this rehab, I came out, and I was abstinent from the laxatives. But I still struggled for 2 years after that. I struggled a lot with the food. And my real bottom with it was I had this woman who, may she rest in peace, is not with us anymore. She died from this disease. And she took me from meeting. She drove me. I couldn't think. I lost my job because of this disease. I worked in a fancy department store on Fifth Avenue, and my boss caught me binging under the counter, and I lost my job because of it.
Because you were eating.
Because I was eating, and
was the binging? Describe what you were doing when you were binging. I mean, why would a boss come in and say, oh, gosh, she's eating, you're fired?
Well, because I was on the sales floor, and you're not supposed to eat on the sales floor.
Oh, okay.
So I was on the sales floor, and I was eating, and it was just really humiliating, because she's like, you have food in your face, wipe it off. And I worked in a cosmetics department, too, so that was really humiliating. I couldn't even hold a job because of the disease. I couldn't function.
Was it all kinds of food, or was it the preference to, I mean, like, did your mom, you battle over, was like the Oreo cookie, the brass ring that everybody would fight over? Or
it was anything. Anything. If it walked, I ate it. No pun intended. Really.
And dogs ran scared.
No, not like in the War of the Roses when she made, when they made pate out of the dog.
But in the
really depths of my disease, when there was nothing to eat, I would eat raw potatoes.
Raw potatoes aren't bad, actually. I've had them.
Go for it. Go for it, Scott. If it rocks your world, Scott, go for it.
Of course, I have issues.
Well, you know what they told me, Scott? We all have issues. Issues are like tissues. You pull one out of the box, another one pops up.
I love that. Now, pass the potatoes, please. And hold the heat. I understand what you're saying, though. I mean, it would come down to whatever was in front of you, I would eat.
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
And where did it get to? I'm sure there were points of embarrassment along the way, too, right? I mean, you were.
Of course there was. I used to steal food from my relative's house. I remember I was staying over. I have family that live in Toronto, and I remember staying over, and I remember there was like a cake in the refrigerator, and I remember eating half the cake and trying to run out to find a store that had the same cake to replace it, and just... It's exactly the same thing as any other addiction.
It's like if you're drinking vodka with the kids or whatever, if you're a kid and you're drinking vodka and stealing it from your parents, and then you put the water up in the bottle to make sure that it looks like the levels are the same, it's all the same stuff. I'm just trying to keep this secret going, but I've got to feed the beast.
Exactly. They say that... You know, they say that the disease of addiction is about hiding, hoarding, and hustling. And that's exactly what this is. It's I hid out from people. It was like, this is my food. This is mine. You know, I don't want to share it with you. And just hustling, like the planning and the scheming. How am I going to get rid of this person, that person, to go eat it? And it's a sad disease. It's not a cool disease. Like, mm-hmm. I would say they make movies like Clean and Sober. Mm-hmm. Like, I think being an alcoholic is cool. To me, that's a cool disease. But they'll never make a movie called Thin and Abstinent. They'll never make a movie like that. You know, it's not a cool disease.
It's also very tough because, I'm not going to say tougher than alcoholism or tougher than gambling or any of the other afflictions that you can have where your life is becoming unmanageable or is unmanageable. But you need food,
right,
to live. That to me is you need sustenance, and food and water are two of the bases that you need to live. And this is about basically a required acquirement for life that you're having a problem with. That makes it tougher than ever, does it not? So you say, okay, I need this to live. Look, I don't need the alcohol. I don't need a six-pack of Labatt's every time I come home. I don't need it. Now, it was my choice to take it or to drink or to drug or whatever it was. Didn't need it, but you need food. Would you ever justify yourself with that as well?
Well, absolutely. You have to face I have to face my drug 21 times a week. And sometimes it's harder than others. The way that I work my food.
Wait, hold on. We'll need more time for that. 21 times a week. Figure it out, folks. 3 squares a day, 7 days a week. That's 21 times. We'll find out how and why we work this to live one day at a time with Wendy on Steppin' Out.
More true stories of real people who clawed their way back from addiction are just a tap away with Steppin' Out Radio's new mobile app, available for iOS and Android devices. Go to steppinoutradio.com on your phone or tablet now and click the banner icon. Find that favorite episode, share it through email, or post it on Facebook and Twitter. steppinoutradio.com has one-touch subscriptions for iTunes, Google Play, and all other popular podcasting apps. Find it at steppinoutradio.com.
Welcome back to Stepping Out. Scott Clark with you, along with Wendy. We are speaking with and listening to this beautiful young lady talking about her addiction to overeating and how she's dealing with it one day at a time, how she deals with it 21 times a week. That's three times a day, 7 days a week. I need to eat. I need sustenance. What do you do 21 times a week to not overeat?
Well, the way that I do my food is I weigh and measure my food. I know what I can handle and I know what I can't. I know that certain things are like too sexy for me, like sugar, white flour.
Like Oreo cookies, man, right?
Yes, absolutely. Too sexy for me. Can't do it.
They're sexy for me, too. Girl Scout cookies were big, too. The Girl Scout cookies, they were so good. But that's sexy stuff.
Yeah.
All of that is sweet stuff.
Sugar, anything, white bagels, cream cheese. And sometimes I've run into some problems over the past few years because I've met people dating, being single, who were not in the program. And a thing when you're dating is to go out and share food. Mm-hmm. And I can't do that.
It's so romantic to share dessert, maybe, right? I mean, there's things that you have to go through in life where you have to sit back and say, look, I just can't do this. This may be what people are doing, but I can't do this because I have to take
right.
care of myself.
I can't. One thing I tell, I'm up front. I can't share a bottle of wine. I can't share food. And it's caused problems for me because people want that. They want to go out and share food.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay. You know, it means that they weren't meant for me. I'm meant to be with somebody who understands that I have an addiction. I have a problem. I weigh and measure my food three times a week, and I don't pick up no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like they say, there's a saying in AA, 50 drinks are not enough and one is too many.
Mm-hmm.
One bite is too many and 50 are not enough.
One bite is too many.
Right.
Although I need, is it one bite of that certain food that could set me off? Is that what you're talking about? Because you need to bite food. You need to have a bite or two. You have to have a few bites to keep your nutrition, right?
Well, yeah. When I say a bite,
mm-hmm.
I mean a compulsive bite. Anything that's out of my food plan,
okay.
And anything that's out of my weighed and measured parameters.
Mm-hmm. Is it difficult for the measurements? And you know, somebody who's listening might say, "Well, my gosh, you've got to measure in every bit of your food every day. I mean, can't you just be moderate?"
For me, I'm so used to it. And I like weighing and measuring my food. I think it's a great tool. I think it's kind of cool because it tells me, it puts boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
See, the world, a lot of the people, the problems in the world, we don't have boundaries. We don't know when to stop. That's part of my problem is I wasn't raised with boundaries. So this is a great tool. It tells me when to stop. The only time maybe I'll have a problem is when I go to, let's say, someone's house. Like the big joke in my family is with the salad bowl. Like they all know that I'm gonna eat salad. So it's funny when I go to my family for, let's say, a holiday or for dinner, they always have like the big salad ready made for me. So they all know to pass me the vegetables.
Uh-huh.
But that's okay. It's like a joke already
right.
in my family. And sometimes, you know what, when people ask me about my food, how come I'm not eating this and how come I'm not eating that and why do I do it's really not about me. It's about them.
Mm-hmm.
It's their problem.
Oh, it's the same thing as a drinker. I mean, they'll say, hey, why aren't you drinking, man? Well, usually those people are the people who have problems drinking, are the ones who are watching me, taking my inventory, and they see that I'm not drinking, and they say, hey, come on, have a drink. It's the same thing. And you know, I brought up the term moderation because it's something that addicts truly wish they could have, but it just is impossible.
Absolutely, I mean, is impossible.
There is no moderation.
No, there isn't, Scott.
There isn't. No, you got to be kidding me.
The way if
you two glasses of wine and that's it? Are you out of your mind? You know, when people sit there over there and they have a glass of wine, I'm looking at them, and if they haven't drunk it in 10 minutes, like, drink the wine. Drink the wine. Do you say that about food too? When you look at them, say, eat your food.
Wait, you're asking me if they say that about me?
No, if you're looking at somebody across the table and go, my God, why don't you eat that?
Well, sometimes like when they leave a little bit, because I'm somebody that eats like everything on my plate. So if they leave a little, I'm like, oh, God, no. Why are you leaving that?
Right, exactly. Thank you very much. We're all in this together. We are all in this together. I wanted to go back and talk to you because you had mentioned earlier about job loss and what it takes, you know, where this can go, where this can take you. And you lost your job because of eating.
I did. I was working in a famous
department store. Not because you were obese, but because you were eating.
Right, because I was eating. And I was working in a famous department store on Fifth Avenue, and one of the rules is you're not supposed to be eating or drinking on the floor. And I was eating. I was under the counter. I was eating, and my manager caught me, and I lost my job over that. It was just the most humiliating experience. She just said, wipe the food off your face, and my clothes were dirty, and it was just really, embarrassing.
The humiliation, the remorse from overeating. Wendy's been there, done that. More with Wendy on Steppin' Out when we return.
Aren't these stories of addiction and recovery inspiring? Wish you could share them instantly with friends or even relatives? You can with Steppin' Out Radio's new mobile app. It's available for iOS and Android phones and tablets. Share that episode in an email, Facebook post, or tweet with a single tap on your screen. Download shows to your devices and listen while working, jogging, or lounging. Prefer a podcast? Steppin' Out Radio is on Google Play, iTunes, and many other podcast platforms. Go to steppinoutradio.com to subscribe.
One step at a time, one day at a time. This is Steppin' Out Radio. This is Reality Radio. Scott Clark with you. We appreciate you joining us as we've had our conversation here with Wendy, who has been recovering from her addiction of overeating one day at a time, 21 times a week. It's interesting, an entire lifetime of dealing with this. What is your life like today, Wendy, in recovery?
Well, it's nothing like it used to be. Thank God. Even my best days. I'll use the words not sober with food, mm-hmm. are still worse than my worst days now. And, you know, you put down the food and a lot of other, like, the food, I was sleeping when I was in it. And then when I got abstinent, I was like, oh, my God, I woke up. Oh, my God, I have to do this. My bills aren't paid. This isn't done. That's not done. So the way that I am now is that I keep myself sober down the line with everything. And I face my fears. I face everything on a day at a time, because I've learned that also that whatever you fear, whatever you resist is going to persist. It's going to keep coming back at you. And I'm able to face it now because I have a clear head, whereas before I didn't. And I'd love to tell anybody who's struggling with this disease that there is help. You can get help, and you're not alone. And if I can do it, then anyone can do it. I couldn't. I was somebody that couldn't get a day together. I could not get a day of abstinence together. And it really is about, for me, they say it's a day at a time, but for me it's about making it round trip from door to door without picking up. I don't count days anymore. Although it's 14 years, but I don't even know my date. I don't even know my anniversary date, because I just say that it's sometime in November. It's my anniversary month. I've learned don't count the days, make the days count. And when you're in the moment, when you want to pick up, whether it's food or whatever is the addiction du jour, I'll say, of the day, you know, make a phone call first, because the craving, the craving, like the yearning, it does pass. It really does, because you're going to feel pain whether you do it or whether you're not going to do it. And whether you if you do it, that pain is going to get stronger. And if you don't do it, then that pain will be pain. It'll be painful, but then it'll get stronger too. And you replace your life with other things.
Like, there's always help.
Absolutely.
Wendy, thank you so much for joining us. This is
Scott
Clark.
Scott.
We'll see you next time on Steppin' Out.